all mythology has him winning all those victories. He's the good warrior hero God. Now, in spite of the perversions, the Psalms still say of the Messiah, which is Jesus Christ, Psalm 91, thou shalt tread upon the lion and the adder, the young lion and the dragon shalt thou trample underfoot. Why is Hercules always the good warrior who defeats the evil one? Why is the virgin always pure? From the earliest, though they turn him into idol worship, creations of man's hand, instead of worshiping the Creator who hung the heavens in a way to display his message, the truth was still back there, to be read in the heavens, that God would right the mess that had been created by man in his fall and Satan in his deceiving, by a righteous seed born of a virgin, a righteous branch born of a virgin, a child that was the desire of all nations, who would become our kinsman redeemer, the two-natured one, who would be the shepherd that would protect his sheep and harvest them out of this world, who would confront the scales, face the cross, become the victim, obtain the crown, who would confront the scorpion, be bruised in one heel but crush him with the other foot, would wrestle with the serpent to keep him from getting the crown. As the man who wrestled, who would be the Hercules that would fight all evil power and prevail. What comes next? Sagittarius. Here we focus in on the two-natured person with the arrow drawn, the mighty warrior, the incarnate one. What are his decans and what does it have to say? This happens to be the constellation, by the way, that has one of its decans lined up with the North Star, having the North Star. Right now, Polaris is the North Star. And if you look at the Earth as it goes around, that at the pole of the Earth shoots to the North Star. How many of you know the Big Dipper points to it? And as it goes around, you can locate the North Star with the Big Dipper. Even kids know that. Now, Polaris is the North Star now. But when the pyramid was designed, it was designed to have that descending passage of the pyramid line up and side in on Draco or Draconis, the dragon, which is a decan, one of the three supporting constellations of Sagittarius, the archer, the centaur. The map of God's plan of the universe keeps going. And God had to wait 11,000 years after he hung these heavens for him to make their precession, to put his witness in stone, the pyramid, sighted in on the dragon star in the constellation of Sagittarius with its decan Draco, or the Draconis, the dragon, where the dragon again represents what the serpent represented and what the scorpion represented. Through all these heavens, God works out a picture book and drama of the war between the coming Redeemer and the dragon. How's it going to end? I like to read the end of the book without going all the way. We go past all these various constellations and we come to the last one. Leo, the king, aroused for rending. The serpent fleeing, the old lion, Leo. How many of you know you always have Leo the lion with that serpent under his foot as he conquers him at the end? Now, I don't want to spend more than 1 week on this. I got so much Bible to preach. I'll never finish it if I pastor till I'm 240 at the King's House of Faith in Glendale. I preach every Sunday to a congregation that listens to me for an hour and a half and gets mad, some of them, because it isn't longer. I don't want to stay on the constellations. This is no more interestingly enough to me, it is no more a part of the main course of the meal than hors d'oeuvres. What I am in the business of doing is teaching that God's in control of everything. In the previous hour, we went around this room, looking at this room as the heavens that surround us. A couple hours back in a previous festival, we talked a little bit of the dimensions of space, which is old hat to people who know anything about it. And to see that God put these stars, listen, the precession of the equinoxes is such, once every 25 to 28,000 years, that north star would be Draconis lined up with that shaft that goes down into the pyramid. And when God hung the heavens, he had to time it in such a way that the pyramid, placed at a certain spot in Egypt, would line up. 11,000 years went by. It's like you're going to see somebody and there's only one train going to go by in 26,000 years and you've got to wait 11,000 years to get on that train or you won't end up at the right destination. To see that kind of control, that God hung these heavens and knowing man's condition to come, knowing the warfare, having seen a third of heaven fall as Satan rebelled against him, brooding over this earth, that it had Satan on it, because the Bible clearly says before Lucifer fell, he was in Eden. We confront him in Eden after his fall. What we read about in Genesis 1-2 onward is a recreation of this earth that had a prehistoric and a pre-Genesis 1-2 existence. Satan was here then. If dinosaurs were here then, he could handle them. Birds of a feather flock together. Even Al-Yuk couldn't handle them. Satan was in Eden before he fell. And God saw heaven emptied of a third of its inhabitants as that crowning cherub of the mountain of God rebelled against God and warfare broke out. God, brooding over the face of the deep, said, "Let us make man in our image." Once he recreated and separated light from darkness and land from water, he brings forth the plants. He recreates new life. What do you think he said to Adam and Eve? Replenish the earth. He didn't say plenish it. Replenish it. There had been previous life on it. He starts over. When God says, "Let us make man in our image," what the original is, "Let us make Adam in our image." And God created not man, God created Adam. I'm convinced there are other kinds of creatures that don't come from Adam. Bureaucrats, for example. Missing links. And God wrote his message in the stars of the way he had won his battle over Satan. The tragedy is he intended man to be, for the most part, on his side as he fought Satan. First cat out of the bag, Satan won most, well, he won all of mankind, Adam, over to him. So now God, in his plan of salvation, not only has to fight Satan, he's got to redeem lost man, lost Adam. But he had the plan laid out in the heavens. Tell me God isn't in control. That's my business, to teach people God's in control. I don't want you to become expert astronomers. I mean, if you can, have fun. It's a marvelous study. Spend your life at it. I'm simply teaching wherever you look, genuine, accurate truth shows God's in control. You don't have to park your brains at the gate to become a Christian. That's why Paul could say, "You're without excuse. If you turn your brain loose, you'll see God everywhere. He controls history." That makes me know, hey, we prayed some weeks back, God's will be done for this church. God's in control. He can steer the stars to tell his mastery. It's about time you and I face up to who the boss is and get on his side. Can I change the subject?
Yes, sir.
It's all right with you? Okay with you, Mike? Huh? Uh-huh. Now, there's another little book. I like books. I mean, I got on to my people tonight. They don't learn how to pick my books up like newborn babes. I'm going to put some dents in their head. I'm in the business of communicating value. I like books. On a sweltering August morning in the... Oh, the year is the Pharaohs of Ancient... the book is The Pharaohs of Ancient Egypt by Elizabeth Payne. There are all kinds of interesting books on this subject. On a sweltering August morning in the year 1799... Notice the year. The Egyptian sun beat down on a scene of frenzied activity in the Nile River Delta. There, not far from a little town called Rosetta, a company of French soldiers were digging with a speed born of desperation. They were members of young Napoleon Bonaparte's Egyptian Expeditionary Force, and they were under threat of attack from both land and sea. All morning, their commanding officer, Major Pierre Bouchard, had forced himself to move cheerfully among his men. But now, his back to his troops, he was staring bleakly out at the Mediterranean Sea. It was useless to go on acting if all were well. The French army faced disaster. Napoleon's Egyptian campaign, which had begun so brilliantly, was ending in catastrophe. Just 12 months earlier, Napoleon had conquered Egypt in a lightning campaign of 3 weeks' time. From that moment on, everything had gone wrong. England, fearing the French control of Egypt would threaten her vital land and sea routes to India, had ordered her fleet to the Mediterranean. Shortly thereafter, Napoleon had entered Cairo in triumph. The British Navy surprised the French fleet at anchor near Alexandria. In a fierce naval battle, the English blew up and sank most of Napoleon's ships, leaving Bonaparte and his forces stranded in Egypt. Hard on the heels of this first calamity came a second. Egypt belonged to the Turks in 1798, and it was part of their vast Ottoman Empire. That was 11 years plus 100. No, just exactly 99 years, wasn't it? Earlier. Or was it? No, 1 year earlier. Yeah, I had a right to be mad. Just 1 year earlier. Napoleon had assumed that the aged Turkish Empire was too enfeebled to fight his seizure of their Nile Valley. Bonaparte was wrong. Not long after the British had destroyed the French fleet, the outraged Sultan in Constantinople declared war on the upstart French general. I said, what are you reading this for? So is archaeology. I spent some time last week on the 70 weeks of years and when they started. There are some significant figures in the Bible, some of which speak of victory, some of which speak of destruction. And there is a very significant figure known as seven times in a context of seven times 360. Seven times a day for a year times 360. I preached one Sunday morning on how many indicators come to that magic date at the turn of the 19th century when an explosion of knowledge suddenly gave the data that could reveal God's lost people, the 10 tribes. Suddenly the data comes forth that could reveal some of the sources and coordinate that vast knowledge in ancient worlds of the zodiac, studied so much in Egypt. Suddenly, at the same time, the explosion of archaeological knowledge included the breaking onto the scene of the truth about the pyramid, all at the same time, as if some master planner said, "This is the time." In the fullness of time, God sent His Son. The Bible says God has a set time for everything. He makes things happen at His time. You haven't listened to me long that you haven't seen the frequency with which this 19th century, beginning at the turn, the last quarter of the 18th century, the beginning of the 19th century, into the middle of the 1800s. Here it is again. Now, God sends Napoleon Bonaparte to Egypt. He said, "Oh, he doesn't do things like that." Napoleon went down there and took with him, because of his hunger to know things about ancient religious relics and archaeology, learned scholars called his savants. If he hadn't lost after winning the first victory, what I'm now reading wouldn't have happened. Certainly wouldn't have happened at the time it happened. Not long after the British had destroyed the French fleet, the outraged Sultan in Constantinople declared war on the upstart French general. Turkish troops and ships were dispatched southward to throw him out of Egypt. This was not all. Blockaded by the British and beset by the Turks, the stranded French faced still another enemy. Egypt's military aristocracy, the fierce Mameluke cavalrymen, refused to accept defeat. After their first rout by Napoleon, they had galloped off into the desert to regroup their forces. Now they were reported to be thundering back to Cairo, bent on revenge. Faced with these three formidable foes, the desperate French were digging in wherever they found themselves. "Major Bouchard!" Behind Bouchard's back, a soldier had scrambled up over the top of his trench. There was a puzzled expression on his grimy, sweat-streaked face. "Major Bouchard, sir!" The call brought Bouchard to attention. He turned, saw the beckoning soldier, and made his way through the heat and dust and confusion to the man's side. "Beg pardon, sir," the soldier said uncertainly. "It may be nothing, but would you have a look down there?" Bouchard bent forward. In digging a trench, the soldier had uncovered the ruins of an old wall. Embedded among its crumbling yellow bricks and winking up at Bouchard like a huge black diamond was see you tomorrow night, folks.